The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. And now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today, we're tackling H1N1 swine flu with guest expert Dr. Douglas Holt, director of the Hillsborough County Department of Health. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with 1,800 women, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through health education. And, as mentioned, today we're tackling H1N1 swine flu, a topic which has been in all the newspapers and no doubt will continue to be in the newspapers for some time to come. And we have the honor of having as our guest the director of the Hillsborough County Health Department, Doug Holt. Doug, it's great to have you here.
Welcome, and I'm honored to be here.
Douglas Holt, or I should say Dr. Holt, is the director of the Hillsborough County Health Department, which is the fourth largest by county population of Florida's 67 county health departments. It provides services to the county's 1.4 million residents and is responsible for assessing, maintaining, and improving health and safety within the county. Dr. Holt is also a professor of medicine and associate director at the University of South Florida. Dr. Holt earned his medical degree from the University of South Alabama in 1984. He then moved to Tampa, Florida, where he completed his residency in internal medicine at the USF College of Medicine. Since completing his residency, Dr. Holt joined the USF faculty in 1989. Prior to being appointed as the medical director of the Hillsborough County Health Department, Dr. Holt was the chief of medical staff for 2 years. He was also the acting deputy state health officer in September 01 through February 02. He is an active member of many state and local organizations. Dr. Holt has led an initiative to incorporate quality management and co-creating a philosophy throughout the Hillsborough County Health Department. The health department has embraced the Sterling criteria, and maybe we have an opportunity during the show to talk a little bit about that, as its management system and has started the transformational journey. The health department is initiating new alliances in order to better leverage available funding to achieve its mission, which includes collaborating with organizations and local universities to advance the public health system to state-of-the-art levels, improving its relationship with county commission, and strengthening partnerships with other county health departments to develop a consortium for functions such as purchasing and the resolution of common issues. The health department's vision and values focus is on, of course, customers, employees, community. And the department's vision and values serves as the foundation for all the department does now and in the future. And again, that's great to have you here with us. And so, H1N1, I guess no one predicted this would come when it finally emerged on the radar screen.
Well, that's true. Actually, we were predicting bird flu, if you even remember back a few years ago. The idea of it mutating from some of the chickens that were infected in Asia and then making its way over to the United States. Well, in contrast, what happened, it was sort of sprang up on our doorstep, which is a whole interesting concept, because we actually were imagining we would see it, you know, a few weeks away coming gradually here. Instead, you know, we found out suddenly it was at a place that we send cruise ships to about weekly here out of Tampa. So
down in what, Mexico, I guess.
Down in Mexico, yes.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it just goes to show how hard and how difficult it is to actually predict the flu season, what the nature of that particular strain, that particular year. Even though, I guess, studies are done to give a sense of prediction, it's very difficult to do.
We're pretty good at predicting. If we can see what's going on at the end of a season, we can pretty much, with reasonable reliability, predict what will be the dominant strain of this, I guess you would call it, influenza stew that's sort of churning away. But what happens with a pandemic, this is the novel virus. There is a mixture, a mutation, where like four or five different influenza strains all come together and create a virus that is essentially unique or one that we've not seen in so long that 90%+ of the population has no existing immunity.
And that's what the difficulty in predicting is, in the mutations and what actual strains come together.
That's right. I mean, the swine flu, H1N1 2009 novel is the technical term, is a pandemic. And that means essentially that there are epidemics going on all over the world. And that happens on average about every 30 years, but it had been almost 50 years since we had had one, since our last one. And that's when this makes a dramatic shift in the genetic material within the virus. Instead of, we call it the normal changes are kind of a drift. They're just a little change. When it shifts, the genetic shift that occurs is what causes the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. And so just again, explain the fundamentals to our listeners. So each year, the vaccination is available based on the expectant strain of virus to appear that year, winter?
That's correct. If your listeners could imagine, I'm not sure how many of them grew up in the South where they have what we call gumball trees, and there's these little spiky things that I used to get in my yard, have to rake up. But these little projections on the surface is what changes, and that really determines the immunity that a person has. And that's where we number and label them H1N1 or H5N3, and all these different numbers are due to what's on the surface, the outer coat. And when that's what's changing, and when it becomes a dramatic change, instead of little pointed spikes, they're big squares or something that your body doesn't recognize, now you have no existing immunity. And the difference is that each year those spikes may change slightly enough that even if you got infected last year, you'd still probably have some immunity or what we call partial immunity to protect yourself from getting infected. But when they change so dramatically like this, then you have no immunity. Occasionally, and it does happen that the vaccine is typically three types of influenza merged together. The two influenza A's and one influenza B. The two A's are what we predict by looking at what was the most common at the end of the season, say in February, March, April of each year, and we make the vaccine for the coming year based on that. Well, this virus really didn't come up until late April, early May.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it would have been part of the mixture.
And that's what I was going to, because some people, or many people, don't know whether or not receiving the vaccine is right for them. But the same people will receive, or some of these same individuals will receive the seasonal flu shot. So the point you're making that I'd like to make clear for everybody is, if this H1N1 swine flu virus was recognized, say, a few months earlier, 6 months earlier, it would be in the normal vaccine one would receive this year for the seasonal flu.
That's correct. We would not have had to make a whole second batch of the vaccine to treat this one particular one. Right now, I think it's important for the listeners to understand that there are actually two independent factors going on. And a virus has all it wants to do is get out, circulate, and infect and spread. H1N1 is the dominant, or swine flu is the one we're currently seeing, and it is the dominant virus, but it's still early, before the normal season. So essentially, we're in the early stages of our swine flu epidemic, and predictably, there's nothing to suggest we will not see a seasonal flu outbreak, probably starting in late December to early January, just like we would have seen anyway.
Is it still a potential for the virus that's out there to mutate again this season?
Well, this influenza always has a potential to mutate, and that's essentially how we got this novel swine flu to begin with, was mutations. This virus in the viral world is what we would call relatively unstable, so it does mutate, and it's also promiscuous in that you can get birds or influenza that's in birds mixing with pigs, and so you get things that you generally don't see with other type of viruses. The result of all that is that you certainly can see mutations. Now, they've been tracking that very closely with this swine flu, and so far the good news is that it's not mutating to become more deadly or that it's changing the way it's spread or anything else. So when I use that analogy of the gum ball, the inside of it, the genetic material that's inside the core is really pretty stable so far.
And that's what would indicate the aggressiveness of the particular virus?
Correct. That's the inside is what determines the lethality, the mm-hmm. severity, that if you get infected, what's the chance of you becoming sick enough to be hospitalized or even dying? That varies, and it's almost like if you imagine our listeners are used to hurricanes and we hear, you know, a Cat 5 and Cat mm-hmm. 1 and things. There is also a severity index, with the seasonal flu being sort of a 1. This one is a little above that, but not much, not like the 1918.
Mm-hmm. But then again, when it first appeared on the scene, no one knew what to expect, and I think they were expecting, or maybe they were asking people to plan for the worst.
And not only that, the very first reports out of Mexico, if you look closely, it was the data and the reports was that it was actually causing very severe pneumonias in a high number of people. We actually think probably that we were only seeing the tip of the iceberg, and that was an overrepresentation of the actual lethality or the severity. But when we first saw this, I certainly was concerned.
Mm-hmm. So in that case, the more severe cases kind of floated to the top first.
That's correct. Particularly in Mexico, they don't have quite as robust of a reporting system, and the doctors and the public health. So we were certainly seeing the the cases where people were dying or being in the hospital, but we weren't accounting for some of the others that were milder.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. This is your opportunity to call with any question at all on H1N1 swine flu or the seasonal flu or any other question about public health, for that matter. Here we are at 289-1860, 289-1860, outside of Hillsborough County, 877-969-8600. Be right back.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay. Here we are at Focus on Females. We are back tackling H1N1 swine flu. And on the line is Steve from Wesley Chapel. Steve, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Appreciate it.
And you have a question today for Dr. Holt.
Yeah, I grew up when I was a kid having very bad asthma. Could have died from it, but then either outgrew it or got cured at about age 12. But it seems like now I'm 56, and for about the last 3 years, it seems like maybe once a year I'll get a upper respiratory infection that will really turn into extreme difficult breathing. And they've told me that it could be a part of adult onset asthma. and I mean, I've been to the emergency room from it because I really, really couldn't breathe. And so I'm very nervous about the swine flu, and that I've heard it is it does affect your respiratory system, and I'm wondering if I'm in a high-risk group. I ought to definitely get the vaccine because of my history, and if I am going to get it, I've heard that you really want to get the one without the preservative in it because it doesn't have mercury. Is that true?
Quick question for you, Steve. Have you previously had the flu? Or how long has it been since you had the flu, seasonal flu?
Maybe 2 years.
Okay. So that was during this period that your respiratory difficulties reemerged.
I think it might have been 2 or 3 years ago, yeah, and it didn't affect my respiratory system, the flu, at that point.
Did
I
not.
Thought it might be different, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Steve. Just another quick question is, do you get vaccinated annually for influenza, just a regular seasonal one, or do you?
I've been sporadic about it. I didn't last year. Okay. I did the year before.
Okay. Well, let me address number one. You have what sounds to me like a reactive airway syndrome, and very likely then things that affect your respiratory tract with, and infections are a prominent one. You can get what's called post-infectious bronchitis, and so you may get over the initial infection, but your lungs will remain very sensitive to things for some period of time. The H1N1 swine flu does seem to have a predilection for people with asthma in making their asthma worse. So you would fall into what I would call the group that is at high risk for serious illness. It doesn't necessarily mean you would end up in the hospital, but you could have a fairly prolonged case. So I would definitely recommend that you be vaccinated. Both because of this condition and your age, you're over 49, you're not eligible or you would not be advised to have the flu, the mist, where you snorted up the nose thing. As far as the other shots, the only difference between the two shots is whether the one with the preservative is the multi-dose vials. It has thimerosal in it, which technically is really not a mercury issue, but it is used to prevent cross-contamination. It is not dangerous. In fact, that's what the majority of the types of vaccines we give for influenza every year have this preservative in it. So I would recommend that you get vaccinated with whichever form of the vaccine that your doctor has available.
Okay, and if I don't really see a regular physician, can I, since you're saying I may be in the high risk, can I go to a emergency room and get vaccinated, or how could I get the front of a line?
Yeah, that's a great question, and the supply right now is really driving most of our access. In Hillsborough County, we've only received in the first 3 weeks about 35,000 doses, and those have been distributed through pediatricians and obstetricians because those have the kids and pregnant women have the highest risk group in schools. Within the next 2 weeks or so, and certainly I'm actually hoping by certainly the Thanksgiving week, we're going to have enough to do open access where we will be supplying pharmacies, walk-in clinics, but I would not go to the emergency room. Number one, they don't really have vaccine for the general public, and it's a place where you can actually catch things.
Right. Okay. I'll just wait till it comes to open access and go to my local walk-in or something, right?
Would this be announced through the media when these extra vaccines come aboard?
Yes. Right now, we are going to announce both through the media and through a variety of different ways to let people know what's going to be available. We're hoping to use websites, internets. You can go on the locators. The challenge right now is you can go on and look at a locator, but you won't find any place that actually has it available to anyone outside of their employees, their patients, if there are private doctor's offices, and now for the schools.
When you mean a locator, would you just describe?
Yeah, it's a website,
okay.
And you go on, and basically you can put in your county name, and they will list the places that have the vaccine. We're required to populate that as soon as we're able to indicate that we have supplied vaccine to those people who are open to the public.
Okay. And what's the website for the Department of Health?
You would test me.
Right, we're going to come right back. Hang on, Steve. We're going to be right back with more on after a quick break of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling H1N1 swine flu. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, the focus. Focus. Yeah, yeah, the focus.
Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. The coroner's office in Cleveland says six bodies found at the home of a convicted rapist were all female homicide victims. At least four apparently had been strangled. They have not been identified. 10 million more doses of swine flu vaccine expected to be available this week. That word from senior White House advisor David Axelrod, who tells CBS the U.S. should have all the vaccine it needs in, quote, short order. A Seattle policeman is dead after his patrol car was struck by gunfire. A trainee who was in the car suffered minor injuries. Police say it happened last night in a mostly residential area. The last time a Seattle officer died in the line of duty was 2006. And Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton's weekend talks with Israel and the Palestinians do not appear to have moved the two sides any closer to the negotiating table. The Palestinians say they won't sit down until Israel stops building settlements. More details at SRNnews.com.
Since joining Facebook, you friended the one who broke your heart in college, only to discover the pain is still there. Become a virtual mob hitman and been showered with beef stew in a virtual food fight. Why not try something a tad more useful? The Talk Radio 860 WGUL fan page. Real-time news updates and a place to connect with Bennett, Gallagher, Prager, Medved, and Hewitt. The WGUL fan page on Facebook. No beef stew, just intelligent talk.
I'm thinking about dressing up as a digital goddess for Halloween. I'll put on my headset, grab my microphone, toss back my long blonde hair, and talk about everything digital. And I'll take all of your phone calls, too. Oh, I forgot. I do that every weekend right here. I am Kim Komando, and it's a total blast. So tricks and treats every weekend. Tune in for my show, or I'll turn you into a pumpkin.
Kim Komando, Sunday afternoon at 2 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon, Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2009 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com, and if you have not found relief for your painful red dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling swine flu today with guest expert Dr. Douglas Holt, the director of the Hillsborough County Health Department. And on the line is Steve from Wesley Chapel, who has a history of a reactive airway asthma, wanting to know about his added risk of getting the flu. And so, Steve, are you still there?
Yeah, sure am.
Okay. And so the website, we found it, and here it is, Doug.
Yeah, the website is www.myflusafety.com. That's MyFlusafety.com. That is the website that will allow anyone in the state to go on and identify when the vaccine and where in your community the vaccine will be available.
Fantastic. Let me one other quick question. I have family members that are beginning the vaccine. Does it matter? Is one more effective than the other? The nasal spray versus the shot. Is there one preferred over the other? If you can have a choice, or do you not have a choice?
The nasal spray is only available for people that have no underlying health conditions. Essentially, healthy people between the ages of 2 and 49. As far as the head-to-head efficacy comparing them, there's only been a few real good studies. Generally, the older you are, the better it is to get the shot, actually. The nasal version is alive and is a live form, a weakened form of the virus, and children seem to develop good immunity to that, whereas us older people don't produce as good of an antibody or immune response to the nasal spray as we do to the shot.
Now, isn't it true, too, Doug, that the live, so-called live attenuated vaccine, which is the nasal spray, can also generate some mild reaction?
Well, they both essentially can generate a mild reaction. By and large, what the vaccine is trying to do is to fool your body into thinking it has an infection. With the killed virus, the shot form, they just inject you with a inert, dead piece of the material of the virus. So when your body reacts, you actually can get aches and feel like you're getting a mild case of the flu.
How soon after getting the shot vaccination might you get that flu-like symptoms?
Really, can start within 6 to 12 hours. Last maybe 24 to 48 at most.
Can it start 3 days later after a vaccine?
It can, but that's just like anything that we do. We see the majority, in our bell curve, right. The majority are in that right. That earlier phases. The live virus, the weakened one, also does the same essential thing, except that you actually get a local infection. It's just confined to your nose,
okay.
But does not spread to the rest of your body.
So with the live attenuated nasal spray, you can get stuffy nose and a congested nose. Can it reach the throat as well, or unlikely?
Pretty much, and that's why we avoid using it in people with a weakened mm-hmm. immune system.
Mm-hmm.
In those cases, it theoretically could be spread, but the rest of us, it will stay in the very upper respiratory nose
mm-hmm.
Part of our body.
Right.
What percent of the people have an extreme reaction to the vaccination? Because I heard a story on one of the news programs of some people have even died maybe from just being inoculated, and I know it's a small percentage, but how big is that percentage?
Now, is that, before you answer, Doug, is that the nasal spray or the shot you're referring to? Can you recall?
I can't remember which one she had, but it was for the H1N1, and she almost died, but came out of it.
Well, Yeah. Number one, there's no real percentage for these types of reactions. They are so unique and so individualized that we don't have any way to put a percentage on them. What I can tell you is the one that gets most of the attention is a form of partial paralysis. It's got a very technical name called Guillain-Barré syndrome. That's an illness that actually causes your body to attack its own nerves. The most common cause of that infection or that condition is actually after a form of food poisoning. But with the vaccine, especially in 1976, the last sort of swine flu discussion, it was estimated to be about 1 in 1 million vaccinations there was a risk of contracting this.
Has it been seen since then?
It has been seen on reported cases, but and it's always a wonder of what caused it. I mean, that's the real problem with a neurologist when you talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. You ask them, "Did you get a vaccine? Did you remember any food poisoning?" You're looking for mm-hmm. that trigger, and so the statistics are again not a percentage, but we would say about 1 in 1 million would get that level of case.
But back at that point in the late 70s, there was a, using an epidemiologic perspective, but there was an uptick in the amount of Guillain-Barré cases in that particular year with that particular vaccination that we've not seen since, would you say?
Even with that, the studies are contradictory. Mm-hmm. There was one study that did suggest that there was a association with the vaccine. There were others that said there were not. In general, across the country, I think there's about 150 to 200 cases of Guillain-Barré every year. So you're talking about maybe adding another 1 to 2 cases, and it's very statistically hard to judge.
Okay, well, I appreciate the information. I think it's real important to have this this information coming out because there is a lot of misinformation that we seem to get as consumers out there and kind of spread some panic around. So I really appreciate your show today.
Just thanks very much. And Steve, just remember it, and I don't know if you heard the earlier part of the show, but if H1N1 swine flu was recognized 4 to 6 months earlier, it would be incorporated as a component of the seasonal flu vaccine that everyone gets, you know, people get every year.
Right. So it wouldn't have the cachet of being so scary if it had been a part of the regular vaccine. I also heard, though, that we really should have had a lot more availability by now, but that I guess the government dragged their feet a little bit here, or we wouldn't have this delay that we're experiencing right now. Is that the case?
Well, this is Dr. Holt again. In fact, the difficulty, even when we're getting seasonal, the regular annual supplies of vaccine has been sometimes frustratingly difficult to project. Several of you may remember 2 or 3 years ago, we actually had a significant shortage. One vaccine manufacturer said their virus process didn't even work, and they would have no vaccine, and we went into a dramatic way of trying to dole out what scarcity we had, and the government had nothing to do with that. What they've done is, and this has frustrated me, is that they have given us, I think, unrealistic expectations. They gave us hope about an amount of vaccine that really required everything to work perfectly, and that just never happens, and that's what's really disappointed us.
Some of the news stories about how they explain away, at least in the stories, they explain away the shortage on the fact that the vaccines are developed the old way.
Yes.
In eggs. And that they're number one. Number two, our country does not use adjuvants to try to, ramp up potency of the vaccine. What do you have a perspective of thinking on that?
Well, as far as the production, yes. I mean, I think that is there's a bit of a disappointment. I guess it was 4, 5, 6 years ago. I can't recall when, but the government in invested quite a bit in preparing us for the bird flu pandemic, and one of the largest amounts of money was to improve the technology so we wouldn't have to use eggs. And unfortunately, that has not yielded in this time frame the results we had hoped to. And so it is essentially produced the old-fashioned way compared to most all of our other vaccines. As far as the adjuvants are, I think the ideal use of those is that if you have a certain amount of vaccine, then you can make it go a lot further by using diluted amount of vaccine with these booster agents. I think given the concern everybody has about anything that's mixed into this, it's probably just as well we didn't have adjuvants. I would hate to explain that to people.
I bring that up because I'm just reading from an article in the Wall Street Journal, Wednesday, October 28th. Countries in Europe and elsewhere are using adjuvants to stretch their limited H1N1 vaccine supplies. Some countries have used adjuvant and flu shots for years. So, of course, as you mentioned, we're very sensitive here, certainly to the thimerosal issues and so forth. But glad to bring that up for your comment.
It is, and in fact, the four or five years ago, there was a lot of interesting research, particularly some of the what I would call my old time colleagues would tell us that you could stretch the vaccine instead of doing intramuscular, do it subcutaneously in some other ways. So the adjuvants are very effective at stretching supplies. I think in this case they were projecting they'd be able to make enough without the adjuvants, but they say that we will get enough. It's just it's going to be delayed into December and January rather than getting it all earlier.
Steve, any other follow-up questions?
It's a little disappointing to me if you drag it on into January. I mean, aren't we with how many? I don't know how many are dying per month, but it really seems like that's really been stretched out too far when 100 people are already died or whatever, and then we're not going to have it available until January for some of us. That's kind of a little beyond when it needs to be out. But anyway, I really appreciate the information. You guys generous with your time.
Hang on, Steve. I think Dr. Holt had a comment.
Well, I think we all share you that concern, but we also understanding the way it is produced, I understand that the manufacturers, the companies, aren't dragging it out on a purpose. It's just the situation that we are dealing with. I think the good news, I want to appreciate the public, because I think this is the first year that people have really paid attention to doing the things that we should do every year, such as cover your mouth when you're coughing and sneezing, washing hands, and staying home when you're sick, and that has really made a difference.
And the guideline of 24 hours without a fever, without over, I guess, 100 before you go back into school or back to work? Is that what's recommended as well, back to work?
That is, and understand.
And that's without any kind of temperature-lowering agent like a Tylenol.
That's correct. Understanding that does not mean you are completely non-contagious, but given that in general, this virus is about as severe as our seasonal flu, we have chosen to use that sort of guideline. It allows people to get back with their life without being totally taken out of circulation, if you will. I mean, theoretically, if this was a 1918 level of severity, we'd probably have people stay home until they were completely well, which could be 5 to 7 days. But given what we know about the severity and the amount of illness that's going around, that's a good safe margin.
Is there anything that Steve can do to try to urge things, to change, to improve, or other listeners can do, or things writing to Congress persons, or things pretty well moving forward as best as possible under the circumstance?
I think right now it's about the best we can do, but I think, again, there will be a time that we will look closely at how things went and what can we do really to make it better. And the production of the vaccine, the methods and all, is certainly should be one of the high points. I think the last thing I would advise, Steve, is, and this is important, and I mentioned you did mention that you may not have a primary physician right now, but if you feel like you're coming down with a flu-like illness in the next week or so or any time, the treatments with the drugs Tamiflu or Relenza, in your case, it would probably just be the Tamiflu because we don't like to use the Relenza form of the treatment in people who have asthma, is an important thing that can lessen the severity of the disease. So finding a doctor or emergency room, walk-in clinic, all of them can prescribe that medication.
Well, that brings up an important question then. At what point should Steve, let's say Steve has a 99.5 temperature and with no aches or pains, what should he do anything different other than Tylenol at that point?
No. Temperature by itself, mm-hmm. even 100, if you have no other symptoms, should not indicate that you have a what we call an influenza-like illness. Mm-hmm. Understanding that influenza-like illness doesn't 100% predict influenza. In fact, mm-hmm. it's probably 50 to 70% of the time. So there's another chance that it's something that's non-influenza, but it's fever. You'll have aches and you'll have sore throat, coughing, or sneezing.
Let's ramp it up then. Let's go up the ladder. Let's say he's at 101 with aches and myalgias and arthralgias. And
yes.
Then what should he do at that time?
With his condition and his medical condition mm-hmm. as he described it here, he would be someone I would recommend that seeks out medical.
Should he go to an emergency room at that point? Or
preferably really to a walk-in clinic.
Okay.
You really don't need to go to an emergency room. Mm-hmm. And again, as you'll be put at the back of the line. You won't be mm-hmm. the sickest person there. And you're very likely you're going to either spread it to somebody else or pick up something there.
At what point, then, you mentioned Tamiflu, at what point does that become an option? He's got a reactive airway. I imagine the Tamiflu is reserved for patients that have higher risk.
It is. In fact, that's one of the latest messages when they're studying people, and this is some of the tragedies or the uniqueness about H1N1, swine flu, and pandemics in general, is the people who get the most serious diseases are in the ages of 25 to about 55, mm-hmm. And they have underlying diseases or illnesses. And sadly, I think the report came out that only about half of the people that were getting hospitalized and dying in that age group had sought out medical care. So I think it's very important if you're in that age group, you have a medical condition, and you come down with this influenza-like illness, that you seek your doctor or some medical practitioner to get an evaluation, and highly likely it's obviously would be up to that doctor to make a decision about prescribing Tamiflu.
And would you share with our listeners, how is Tamiflu given?
Tamiflu is given, it's a pill. You take it twice a day for 5 days. Mm-hmm. It historically, for regular flu, seasonal flu, really doesn't, it'll shorten the illness about a day. But they really are showing, or at least we're getting an idea that it has more effect with swine flu, and it certainly has the best chance of progress or not allowing a early illness to progress to a very serious one.
Mm. Well, do they have to confirm that it's a flu disease with the serologies or other
no.
testing before they give Tamiflu?
Excellent question. No, and in fact, the rapid tests that we do in the offices are not good at eliminating. If it comes back positive, then it's a good test in the sense that it tells you it's very probable that you have swine flu. But if it comes back negative, it's still probable that mm-hmm. you have swine flu. So we recommend treatment just based on clinical suspicion, not testing.
Okay. Steve, do you have a sense of the threshold point at which you should seek medical attention now? Steve, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I do, and that's very helpful. One last quick question before I hang up, and that is, do the two of you support the idea of a public option in healthcare? Is that something you find attractive and think would be good for us?
I do have strong opinions on that your question, but at this point in this venue, I'm not comfortable in sharing them.
Okay,
Doug, I'll give you the opportunity to make a comment if you wish.
Yeah, in my official role as a public official, I'm limited in what I can say, and I think our governor has said that he's not in favor of it, and so I'm pretty much bound to that at this point.
Sounds good. Any last questions, Steve? Are you?
No, that's all I have, and I appreciate it again.
All right, great. Thanks for being with us today on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. And let's see, Cedric, should we take a quick break? Let's take a quick break. Come right back.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We learned an awful lot today about H1N1 swine flu with our guest expert, Dr. Douglas Holt, the director of the Hillsborough County Department of Health. And Doug, as we finish the hour, I'd like to ask you for any last thoughts you have for our listeners.
No, I'd say, again, thank you for the opportunity. I think the